The scripture verse today is a short one. It's Matthew 25:40. The Lord will reply, "I tell you, whenever you did this for one of the least important of these brothers of mine, you did it for me."
Terry and I will be reading an article written by Pastor Cheryl, published in the 2019 spring-summer issue of Brethren Thought and Life. Brethren Life and Thought. It is titled, "Unbind What is Bound." Unbind what is bound to bring the underground waters to the surface. Mankind is waiting and longing for such as can do that. That's a quote by Dr. Albert Schweitzer. Bold interweaving strains of a Bach organ fugue struck my senses. Quickly, I increased the volume on the farmhouse kitchen radio and laid aside the sopping mop, allowing the bass chords to evoke wonder in my youthful mind with each transitioned theme. I was mesmerized. The classic tones awakened awe, a stark contrast to the Nancy Lee and Hilltop Singers' daily morning greeting in a little red barn on a farm down in Indiana. I stood transfixed until the song's conclusion. Aside from church hymns emitted from an upright piano and a meek organ, this was my first introduction to classical music. I leaned in to hear more. The WOWO announcer stated, "That was Dr. Albert Schweitzer, a former medical missionary to Western Africa." I no longer remember which recorded fugue it was, nor the concluding words of the DJ. Yet, I will never forget my response. "Why?" I asked myself. "Would a talented musician move to a remote Africa and leave this astonishing gift behind?" Later, as I studied the life of Rudyard Kipling, similar sentiments stirred. Kipling, like Schweitzer, chose to live among indigenous people. Supposedly, Kipling would rock on the front porch during the cool evening hours, recounting his Jungle Book tales to the Indian people, earning him the title of beloved storyteller. Obviously, two men of immense talents sequestered themselves from family and all that is familiar to live in remote areas of the world. It struck a noble chord. Perhaps greatness is not merely discovered and rewarded, I reason. Perhaps greatness, through God's eyes, is joy in simplicity, in sacrificial service. Perhaps, as with the disciples, it is sent. Born in 1875 in a German village in Alsace, Albert Schweitzer had authored three books by the age of 29 and made significant contributions to the fields of music, philosophy, and religion. Regardless of these accolades, accumulating later to three doctorates and the 1952 Nobel Peace Prize, Schweitzer remained committed to common people and the cause of peace. To him, people mattered. His vision, his voice, and his vitality have raised awareness of peace across the world. His overriding hope was to contribute to the peace of the world. He reduced his motto to a singular word, service. So stalwart was his stance that even American presidents still herald him today. The words of Dr. Schweitzer are timeless, stated Jimmy Carter. They are not only relevant today, but they will continue to serve as an inspiration to the future.
The idea, reverence for life, came to Schweitzer in 1915 as he struggled with the universal woes around him, including the environment, animal welfare, and humankind's atrocities committed against one another. The German translation of reverence of life, Ehrfurcht vor dem Leben, is stronger than our English reverence. The German phrase implies intense and immense awe. Thus, Schweitzer expressed his idea as, "Now I knew that the worldview of ethical world and life affirmation, together with its ideals of civilization, is founded in thought. In essence, all life is interconnected and therefore interdependent." In his writings, Schweitzer describes it analogically. As the wave in the ocean surges forward together with all waves, so must we feel in our life the life that is around us with its privations and anguish. Then we will have an ethical code that is meaningful and can sustain a world philosophy. I have ventured to express the thought that the basic concept on which goodness rests is reverence for life, the great mystery in which we find ourselves together with all living things. Schweitzer, an advocate for all creation, understood the distinct difference of nature versus humanity. Whereas nature turns on itself and can be very cruel, humanity has the capacity to act differently. Unfortunately, humanity often forgoes the ways of peace and ignores injustice. Especially tragic to Schweitzer were Christians who ignored the sufferings of others. The world given over to ignorance and egotism is like a valley shrouded in darkness, he once stated. Schweitzer believed that when we let go of ego and pursue peace, sharing in life's sufferings with others, we are making proper use of the power granted to us from God. Still, the path of peace is not without obstacles. Impediments will occur, forcing creative alternatives. Regardless, we must persist. We cannot continue in this paralyzing mistrust, he stated emphatically. The message is clear. We must work with a new spirit if we are to achieve peace. It must have surprised many that Schweitzer switched from the pastorate to the medical mission field, especially when both his father and his maternal grandfather were licensed ministers. In addition, Schweitzer himself was noted as being a brilliant speaker and a polished organist. Still at age 30, after having served in the pulpit for several years, an article called for medical missionaries in Gabon piqued his interest. Schweitzer entered the medical field and immersed himself into the health needs of Africans. Regardless that Schweitzer was building hospitals and caring for life-threatening diseases such as leprosy, sleeping sickness, malaria, and elephantitis, his European visitors still sought out the soft-spoken philosopher discourse. Schweitzer had little tolerance for this. "We are too busy fighting pain," he said. Undoubtedly, if his guests expected tea, crumpets, and quiet discourse on Schweitzer's dissertation on Kant, they left disgruntled. Schweitzer entered the medical field wanting to work with his hands, to create a healing world with medicine, just as organ music helped heal the soul. "For years, I have been giving myself out in words, but this new form of activity would not be merely talking about the religion of love, but actually putting it into practice," he explained in letters written to his parents and friends in the early 1900s.
With all the praise that has been heaped upon Schweitzer over the past century, one would think he was an eternal optimist. Yet Schweitzer, in his own records, recalls days of deep depression, which he felt that no good was coming of his efforts. Throwing his head down in despair, he exclaimed, "What a blockhead I was to come out here to Dr. Savages like these." An African assistant retorted, "Yes, doctor, here on earth, you are a great blockhead, but not in heaven." Undoubtedly, Schweitzer laughed at his own lack of faith. He was known to insert humor as he spoke to others. Having the facial blend of Mark Twain and Albert Einstein, he was once mistaken for Einstein and asked by two young American girls to autograph a book. Not wanting to offend them, he signed Albert Einstein by his friend, Albert Schweitzer. Schweitzer's well-rounded personality reflected his theological stance on peace. After receiving the Nobel Peace Prize in 1952 at the age of 78, Schweitzer pursued the issue of peace with world leaders, dispelling the use of nuclear weapons. Most notably, in his letter to President John F. Kennedy, who in turn stated that Schweitzer was one of the transcendent moral influence of our century. Yet Schweitzer's call for peace extended past human injustice. He sought a universal unity that brought all nature under the auspices of God as creator. Not only are we to adhere to the peaceful ways of Christ in our dealings with humanity, but we are, in our reverence for life, to care for the singular flower that grows upon a path, to carefully not pluck what is intended as nature's gift of beauty. Consequently, Schweitzer was frequently photographed not only examining near-death African bodies accosted by disease, but also playfully stroking a kitten in his arms after he concluded his daily letter writing or feeding a pelican outside his hut. His keen ears could discern the shift of a child's cry when it switched from pain to a request for food. Schweitzer was in tune with all of life, seeking, as he stated, a spiritual relationship with the universe. Because of our interdependence, we are to stay alert and not allow our hearts to grow numb. Schweitzer's words hold life for us today. His warning against apathy speaks to our present generation. He states three temptations exist that precursor a non-caring nature: to fall powerless against the seemingly overwhelming odds of evil, to give up, and to disconnect ourselves from the world. Schweitzer rallies us against the odds by providing ways to counteract the temptation of apathy. For example, entering the pain of the world and assisting in any way possible is the first step. Secondly, by sharing in the sorrows of others, we also share in the victories and joys. It is not a lost cause. Finally, we are to identify with the world, be informed, and be involved. Furthermore, Schweitzer contests the popular image of happiness. True happiness, he believed, occurs when we follow the call of Christ and follow him into the fray of injustice. To be oblivious to disheartening news or to remove ourselves from difficult situations may provide a temporary sense of relief from responsibility, but that is not true happiness, according to Schweitzer. The state of self-absorption is only a shallow existence. If we are faithful to God's call in our lives, true happiness comes with the pursuit of God's call.
Our greatest resource for hope is educating our youth early, states Schweitzer. He believes that if taught a love for nature and diversity deters herd mentality and staves off apathy as youth enter the workforce and the political realm. Imagine a world where all youth are inspired to adhere to God's directive to be conscientious caretakers of His earth and each other. Our aim is raising the next generation, declares Schweitzer, is one that makes us simpler, more truthful, purer, more peace-loving, meeker, kinder, more sympathetic. When youth catch a glimpse of truth, they are emboldened to embrace it. Therefore, we must be careful to nurture this sense of discovery that unites all universal elements. This truth is what I heard when Schweitzer's strains of Bach's fugue searched through our farmhouse radio years ago. It was more than the music. It was more than the man. It was the message that we live for a purpose, the purpose of peace. We are to be caretakers of God's earth and to care for people who are struggling in the throes of life. If waves are crashing and a soul is struggling, we are called to throw out a lifeline. If nature is suffering extinction from our hands, we are called to take measures to atone for the loss. We are not called to remain idle. We are called to action, as Schweitzer was decades ago. Several programs remain active under Schweitzer's name and worldview, despite the fact that he died in 1965. The Albert Schweitzer Fellowship exists to continue his work of compassion. Service projects such as Hats On for Service honor both Martin Luther King Jr. and Albert Schweitzer for a couple of reasons. For one, King and Schweitzer shared the same birthday, January 14th. Secondly, Schweitzer inspired King in his March for Equality. King stated, "Albert Schweitzer looks at men in dark Africa who have been victims of colonialism and imperialism, and there he gave his life to that. He objectifies himself in this great cause." Some historical leaders like King advocated the human rights, while others call for justice in environmental issues. Few encompass the scope of reverence for all life as Schweitzer does. When we see people help others, whether it be a child caught in a deep well or a stray dog stranded in a river, we are stirred with hope. Like Schweitzer, we can see the evils of the world, yet we can make a difference by striving to be instruments of peace wherever we are. By doing so, we escape the condemnation in Jesus' words. "I tell you the truth, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me." Jesus' message was to release those in bondage, to give freedom to those who were shackled by this world. Schweitzer reflects that in his message. We are to unbind what is bound, to bring the underground waters to the surface. Mankind is waiting and longing for such as can do that.